but you're stuck with him. Once I'm gone, none of this will matter anymore.
But your goal.
It's okay. It just doesn't seem to matter so much anymore. And technically, I did learn how to dive. It's just not official. But that's okay. I'm good.
Paul returned about 3:30 that afternoon. He'd worked hard for years to build up such a high tolerance for alcohol that he didn't stagger, but everyone smelled it on him, and his eyes had that bloodshot, glazed-over look he got when his blood alcohol level reached about 80 proof. To everyone's obvious relief, his mood had improved immensely. He put the next day's schedule on the board and walked around to the deck. He glanced about as if looking for someone. He found Krista. He wrapped his arms around her from behind and started kissing her neck, whispering something into her ear. She giggled and didn't mind at all. When Paul pulled Krista toward the bathroom, the other girls snickered amongst themselves while shooting gossipy glances at Reese because of their comments earlier that day. She decided to believe they were just thanking her for riling Paul for Krista. "You're welcome," she mouthed. She shook her head in disgust, thinking she wouldn't miss having to watch him do that anymore when she left. She decided to go hang out in the office for a while. By the time Paul and Krista came out, most of the students had left. Everyone knew the schedule for the next day, so there was no longer any reason to hang around. Reese walked to the office to retrieve her backpack. She reached inside, pulled out her t-shirt, and slipped it on over her swimming suit. She reached back into the pack to find her shorts. She pulled them on, buttoned them up, and stuck her hands in the pockets to smooth them out. Something bulged inside one of the pockets, and she pulled it out to see what it was. She stood, staring at a small wad of money. She tried to remember the last time she'd worn those shorts, what she'd done that would have made her stick change in the pocket and forget about it. She'd done it before, and counted her blessings it happened again. The timing truly was a blessing. A miracle, actually. Now she had a little extra to get by on. She'd become dangerously short on cash, and not only had she been living on one baleada and a banana the last 2 days, she planned to do so until she climbed onto the plane to head home. After that, she had $460 sitting in her bank account. She knew it wasn't enough to get her by until she found a job, a place to live, but worrying about it wasn't going to change anything. She decided not to think about it until she had to. Paul entered the office.
"I need you to stay and help with the night dive, at least to get us off."
He stopped mid-sentence and tensed when he saw Reese staring at a handful of cash with a confused look on her face. He watched her shrug and stick the money into her backpack. She didn't seem too suspicious, and he relaxed.
"You don't have to wait for us to return."
The alcohol had already all but worn off. "I see you're back to your sober, ornery self." He gave her a look but ignored her comment. She sighed. "Why me, after the day we've had?"
"I need you because you're the hardest worker I have."
He walked through the tunnel to the compressor room to grab some tanks. She followed him, reluctantly, and with little enthusiasm. "You're slipping. I think you may have just complimented me."
"Don't get used to it."
He smirked, because she couldn't see him do it.
Paul planned to sit the dive out and just help on the boat. Dobbs was the dive master that night, and Claire planned to go along. Being stuck in the office all day didn't give her much opportunity to dive, so she almost always tagged along on the night dives. When the Swenson family showed up, everyone could see the tension between them.
"We agreed to take turns. Heather, you're sitting this one out," Mr. Swenson said to his teenage daughter.
"No, Dad, I never agreed. You just decreed we'd take turns. I don't see why I should have to sit out to babysit just because you decided to knock up your mistress, break up our family, and ruin our lives."
"It's all right, Bill. I'll stay with the kids," Mrs. Swenson said, trying to restore the peace.
"Holly, I'm not giving in on this. If we give in every time these kids throw a tantrum, we'll never..."
"Bill, it isn't worth the fight." The dive shop crew squirmed, embarrassed to be forced to listen to the family squabble.
"I could watch the kids," Reese volunteered. "Mrs. Swenson, you go dive. I promise we'll stay at the shop and just play. The kids and I will have a great time."
Everyone looked at Reese like she'd just offered herself up to be thrown into a volcano as the sacrificial virgin. No one understood why that thought made her want to laugh. "That is, if it's okay with you." She looked at Paul, but Mr. Swenson jumped on the offer.
"That would be wonderful, Miss...
Williams," she said. Randy Williams, the boat captain, stowed his things and ran through his checks when he heard Reese say her last name.
No way, Mon. I never knew your name was Williams. We must be cousins.
Randy was black and from as far away from Reese's hometown as one could get. Reese couldn't help her laughter. That would be nice. I didn't think I had any family left.
Of course we are. You have to come to the Williams party this Sunday. Welcome to the islands. I'll introduce you to the rest of the family.
Okay. She smiled, but then Randy hopped off the boat and gave her a big bear hug. She tensed up at the contact, but when she saw the look on Paul's face, she forced herself to relax and hug Randy back. She didn't need anyone getting suspicious about her problem and asking unwanted questions.
Family man, they've got to stick together.
Randy's accent was typical for born and bred islanders, white or black. Everyone born on the island attended the same schools and received an adequate education, but a century of isolation before the island was finally discovered by the diving community had left the language with a distinctive vernacular that Reese had only recently started to understand. Paul jumped in, hoping to get the dive moving along.
So, is everyone okay with Princess Denaria watching the kids?
Everyone seemed pleased with the idea, a little confused with the title he'd just called her, but no one said anything about it.
Then what are we standing around for? Let's get wet.
They loaded the boat and pulled away. Reese held the two little kids at her side, and the three of them waved as the divers took off, out to sea. Paul stood at the rear of the boat and watched her.
Why did she do that? Paul asked.
Watch the kids. Claire busied herself setting up gear nearby.
Because she's balmy, that's why. I'd rather cut off my arm than spend 2 hours with little kids.
Claire looked back at the shop to see Reese and the children waving.
I don't mean watch the children. Some people aren't afraid of kids, you know.
He scowled at Claire.
I meant, why'd she offer to help out like that? I told her she could go home once we set off. She isn't getting paid. She hates me, and I treat her like shit. She's going home in a few days, and I think she pretty much knows by now that I'm not planning to let her get her open water dives in.
So you're really planning to do that? Can't believe this. If word gets out that you're taking students' money and not delivering...
He shrugged. I haven't decided, but she's only begged me once. That's not enough. I thought I wanted my pound of flesh.
He looked like he was rethinking his plan, but Claire laughed.
Reese and I spend a lot of time together in the office. I think I've learned a few things about her. You think you're punishing her by keeping her from diving?
It was a statement, not a question. She's scared to death to dive. She's a scaredy-moggy, afraid of her own shadow. But when she has a point to make, she digs in her heels and won't let it go.
She's a feisty one, Paul said with wide eyes. I took her for a mouse. But I was wrong, and she's getting feistier with each day.
All you've done is given her an excuse to get out of making her point. Now, she can go home and still live with herself, because even though she didn't do what she set out to do, it's your fault, not hers. Claire went back to setting up the Swenson's gear for them, and even though he couldn't see Reese anymore, Paul still stared at the shop. The muscle in his cheek twitched. The boat returned an hour and a half later. Reese didn't pitch in to help because she didn't want to leave the children unattended while their mother was still busy, but they gathered on the deck near the boat when they finished.
See you Sunday, cuz,
Randy yelled to Reese as he left. She waved back. So, were you too good for Miss Williams? Mrs. Swenson asked her children. Please, call me Reese. Oh, I'm sorry, but we're trying to teach our children to show respect for their elders. I hope you don't mind if we keep the formality. Yes, that's fine. My parents were the same way. Reese assured her. Thank you so much for babysitting. It was nice to get back in the water again, Mrs. Swenson said. My pleasure. They were no trouble at all. Reese leaned down to talk to the kids. We did our own night dive, didn't we?
Yes,
the children agreed enthusiastically. We saw lots of fish, and some were this big. Asher held his arms out wide to demonstrate.
Tell your mom what else we saw, Reese encouraged. An otterpus, Imogene said.
Reese couldn't help but laugh until she noticed the look on Paul's face, the way he stared. She couldn't tell whether he was angry with her again or something else. It was really just a night snorkel, she continued, trying to assure Paul even more than Mrs. Swenson that she didn't do anything to be concerned about. We stayed right by the dock. I didn't leave their side. I would never do that. I suited them up with flotation devices and flashlights from the gear room. I hope that's okay. She looked at Paul, wondering if she'd figured out his problem. Maybe he didn't like that she'd been so bold as to use his gear. He shrugged like he didn't care, but she kept catching him watch her, and she grew more and more nervous. "Well, at least I got one dive in. It'll have to last me for another few years," Mrs. Swenson said. "If it's all right with Paul, I mean Mr. Weaver," she watched him, trying to take a cue from him. "If it's all right with him, tomorrow I could..."
"Of course. Denaria can watch the kids again tomorrow. That is, if she wants to, and if it's okay with you," Paul said.
"Who is Mr. Weaver? You said his name was Mr. Meanyhead," the little boy said, looking innocently at Reese. "Mr. Weaver is Mr. Meanyhead. He has two names," Reese said without missing a beat, then looked up sheepishly at getting caught. Asher looked up at his mom. "They hate each other's guts," he said with emphasis on the word guts. "Asher, that isn't nice. I'm so sorry. I don't know where he comes up with these things," Mrs. Swenson apologized. The two teenagers laughed at their little half-brother. Dobbs and Claire stood waiting warily to see how Paul would react.
"It's all right, Mrs. Swenson. It's true. We do, indeed, hate each other's guts."
Paul seemed perfectly serious. After an awkward moment of silence, Mr. Swenson finally spoke up.
Where would you recommend we eat tonight? The kids have been asking for pizza." "Coconut Inn has good gourmet-style pizza, and Nana's has a decent, more traditional pizza at a good price," Paul answered knowledgeably. "Well, I think we'd prefer to go traditional, with the kids and all," Mr. Swenson said. "Words like gourmet and kids don't really go together. I'm sure you're all as hungry as we are. Please, eat with us tonight. My treat."
"Oh, no," Claire jumped in before there could be any argument. "Dobbs and I are ready for a nice, quiet evening," she said, looking at the little kids, a fake smile plastered on her face.
Her quick response left Paul and Reese at a disadvantage. Mr. Swenson turned to them and said,
"Looks like it's just the two of you, then."
"No, really, we can't," Reese tried to say.
"I'm not taking no for an answer," Mr. Swenson said. "You can show us the way."
They walked into Nana's and found a table outside, a long, simple plastic banquet table with picnic table benches along each side and mismatched patio chairs on each end. Paul and Mr. Swenson took the end chairs, and Reese started to climb into the bench on one side while Mrs. Swenson sat on the other. The two small children ran to Reese and sat on each side of her.
"Come sit by Mama," Mrs. Swenson said. "I'm sure Miss Williams has had enough of you two for the evening."
"It's fine. I don't mind." Reese helped them onto the bench next to her while Paul stared at her. Heather hurriedly slipped into a seat opposite her stepmother to make sure she wouldn't get stuck sitting so close to the enemy, Reese assumed, but also because she wanted to sit next to Paul. It had become quite obvious she'd developed a crush. Matthew reluctantly climbed in next to Mrs. Swenson, but slid closer to Paul as well. Mrs. Swenson seemed embarrassed by the way her stepchildren behaved as if they hated her. Mr. Swenson seemed oblivious to it, but Reese felt sad about the family dynamic. They ordered, and Reese played finger games with the small children. Paul and Mr. Swenson talked about diving, and Mrs. Swenson watched quietly and listened. The teens didn't engage at all, so Reese started trying to pull them in. By the time dinner was over, Reese had all the kids, even Heather, standing at the side of the table ready to take the spastic test, a game of coordination that Reese had learned years ago. "Okay, take one arm, move it up and then down like this," she showed them and they followed suit. "Now, with the other arm, you have to go up first, then out to the side, then down and back up again. All the while, the other arm has to still just go up and down." She started doing it, making it look simple. The kids tried and everyone laughed hysterically. Mrs. Swenson decided she had to give it a try. While Reese ran through the instructions again, she realized Mrs. Swenson was about the same age as she was, and it caught her off guard. The woman was married with two beautiful children, living the life Reese had always dreamed of, with one exception. Reese lost her train of thought for a moment, but she quickly shook it off. "Where were we?" Reese smiled, but Paul noticed the sadness flicker across her expression.
"You were laughing, happy," Paul said.
She smiled, but it didn't touch her eyes, as if she were trying a little too hard. Okay, like this. Rhys ran through the drill again, and it didn't take long before the light returned to her eyes. But Paul didn't forget as fast.
How do you do that? Mrs. Swenson asked through the hilarity, giving up.
Mr. Swenson and Paul's eyes watered. They laughed so hard.
You try it, Mrs. Swenson said to her husband. He shook his head. How about you, Mr. Weaver?
Oh, no.
Still laughing, Paul shook his head and grabbed for his glass of water, wincing at getting caught watching Rhys again.
Are you gonna marry Miss Williams?
Asher asked Paul. Paul choked on the drink of water he was in the middle of taking when the boy asked. Everyone stopped laughing and turned to stare at Paul, putting him on the spot.
No, we hate each other, remember?
Rhys jumped in to put everyone back at ease, but mostly Paul. He didn't understand why she did that, or why she felt the need to rescue his feelings. You can't marry someone you hate. You have to be in love.
My daddy married Heather and Matthew's mommy, but he didn't love her. He loved my mommy.
Asher, Mrs. Swenson snapped. Mr. Swenson cleared his throat.
Heather told me, Asher said innocently.
Heather guiltily covered her face with her hand. It's rude to ask such personal questions, Mrs. Swenson finally scolded and then glanced down. Awkward silence ensued and only grew more uncomfortable when Imogene climbed onto Paul's lap, put her little hand on his cheek, and stared into his eyes. Paul noticed how everyone worried how he'd react, expecting that someone with his reputation would freeze and wait to be rescued from the horror. He smiled back warmly at the little girl and welcomed her with a kiss on the top of her head. But then he grabbed her and held her up as high as his arms could reach, jostling her in the air with a playful growl. Imogene squealed with delight.
"Gain,"
she said, bracing herself for a repeat, and he obliged.
"I'm glad," Asher continued, "because I'm going to marry Miss Williams when I grow up. She's pretty."
Paul set Imogene back on his lap and reached over to mess up Asher's hair.
"Yes, I guess she is, but no worries. I'm sure Miss Williams will still be available when you grow up. No one else will want to marry her difficult Asher."
Paul did his best to save his slip in front of the family. Heather laughed aloud, and Matthew followed suit. Mr. and Mrs. Swenson smiled, but apparently still felt embarrassed by the personal information Asher had shared.
"I love kids," Paul declared.
He really did, but he knew everyone thought he was teasing because of the awkwardness of the moment. He tossed Imogene in the air again. When the conversation finally moved on, Paul thought back to the moment Rhys looked so sad. He wanted to know why and wished he could read her mind. Maybe that's why he winked, with his left eye, the one that meant it. She avoided eye contact the rest of the night, which gave him more opportunity to study her. And except for that one brief moment of sorrow and Asher's awkward question, she seemed to be having such a good time with the children. He almost forgot how much he was supposed to hate her. The next morning, the Swensons, Paul, and Mitch headed out to dive again. Rhys stayed with the kids. During the surface interval, Mrs. Swenson pulled Paul aside. "Am I making a mistake leaving my kids with Miss Williams? She seems a little hostile. You know, her comments to the kids, calling you Mr. Meanyhead and telling them she hates your guts?" Paul chuckled.
"Mrs. Swenson, I think I am the only hostile bone in Daenerys' body."
He suddenly looked embarrassed.
"Shit, that sounded dirty. I just meant that..."
He paused for a second and sighed.
"I guess I shouldn't be saying shit around my guests either."
He frowned, thinking about what he was trying to say. He'd stopped trying to check his foul mouth in ninth grade, so he wondered why he suddenly felt self-conscious about his word choices. He knew why.
"Rhys, I can't think of anyone else on the entire island I could recommend to watch your kids. She's only hostile to me. I seem to bring out the worst in her."
The liar in her, he thought, reminding himself why he shouldn't be feeling so in awe of her.
"Why does she hate you so much?"
Paul smirked. He wasn't about to tell her the truth. "It's a mutual sentiment."
"Why do you call her Daenerys? I thought her name was Rhys."
"Because she hates it."
"What a strange relationship you two have," she chuckled. "But you're sure that, as a mother, I have nothing to fear?"
"Mrs. Swenson, there is no relationship between Rhys and I."
He turned to finish setting up the gear he was working on. Now distracted, he continued.
"If there was, I might do something stupid like make that girl the mother of my chil..."
He stopped dead. Mid-word, wondering where that had come from. He turned to catch Mrs. Swenson staring expectantly, waiting for him to finish his sentence. Her expression changed, and he realized it was because of the horrified look on his face.
Your kids are in good hands. You have nothing to fear.
He rushed to cover his mistake. Randy, Reese's new cousin and Paul's friend, overheard the conversation and whistled between his teeth. Paul turned to see the shocked look on Randy's face, the same one on his own, but Randy quickly acted like he hadn't heard a thing. Paul mumbled a long string of cuss words under his breath.
Chapter 9. Reese had 3 more days left, but once again, the boat left without her. She walked into the office.
I'm going home without my C card.
Oh, Reese, I tried. I fought with him. Dobbs fought with him. I'm so sorry.
Claire sympathized, though she still had the feeling Reese wasn't really too broken up about it. Reese watched the boat headed in after the morning dives and readied herself to work when it docked. About 50 yards out, Mitch jumped ship and yelled, "Man overboard!" Several people on the boat scrambled, but Shawnee made it into the water first to save him and dragged him back to the shop because the boat didn't wait for them. It was a training exercise, and Shawnee needed the rescue to finish her dive master course. Reese had seen them run the drill several times and felt secretly relieved to know she wouldn't have to do it. When she first arrived, Paul had tried to convince her to become a dive master after getting certified. He had told her she would have time. She almost laughed out loud at the memory. With the gear all rinsed and put away, everyone settled in for a typical afternoon of leisure. Reese sat down on the edge of the dock and dangled her feet over the edge. The deck sat too high above the water for her to soak them, but she didn't mind. She wanted to enjoy every last second she had at the shop. It appeared the coitus club had called a meeting without Shelley. Reese definitely wouldn't miss the ongoing, flagrant details of Paul's sex life and all the drama between the girls with whom he played. She wished she hadn't chosen to sit so close to where they called their meeting, but she was too comfortable to move.
I don't know what happened, but Shelley is really pissed.
She said she'd tell us when she got here, but that she's going to be late on purpose. She wants him to know how pissed she is.
What do you think he did?
I wish she would get here. Do you think he's even noticed she isn't here yet?
She thinks she has more power over him than she really does. Paul could replace her in a second.
Maybe he should.
They all giggled, surely thinking they would be in the running for the open position. That was enough for Reese. She rolled her eyes and finally got up to move to the other side of the deck. Just as she stood, she noticed Shelley, Ula right behind, marching down the plank toward the group of girls who claimed to be her friends. As she walked past the office, an arm reached out the door and grabbed Shelley by the elbow. She turned and slapped whoever had a hold of her. They had words. Fierce words, if Reese read Shelley's body language correctly. It was all so theatrical, Reese couldn't help but watch. Shelley's free arm flailed about and pushed at whoever had a hold of her. Her face burned red with anger, and her anger only escalated instead of getting better. Shelley glanced down the length of the deck and saw the other girls watching. It seemed to fuel her acting abilities, and she became even more animated. She looked again, but this time she saw Reese, and she froze. The rage in Shelley's expression was palpable. She pulled herself from the hand holding her and marched directly toward Reese. The hand followed her, tried to regain its grasp, but when it missed, it floated out of the office and happened to be attached to Paul. He saw Reese, too, and stood unmoving, dreading what he could only assume Shelley planned to do. Reese moved away from the edge of the deck as the thought crossed her mind that Shelley planned to push her off. She prepared to defend herself.
"You're going home soon, right?" Shelley screamed like a woman scorned. "Good riddance. You should have never come here. If you're so high and mighty, you don't belong on this island. There are other islands better suited to snobs like you. You think you're so much better than the rest of us."
Reese stood stunned,
not knowing what Shelley meant. I don't. I'm sorry for whatever you think I've done. I don't know what I've done.
You're trying to show all of us. Shelley waved her hands at her friends, the Coitus Club girls. You've been rubbing it in our faces.
Look at me. I've got Paul wrapped around my little finger. I'm driving him wild with all my look but don't touch moves. Bet he's never worked this hard for any of you. He can't think about anything but you, and it's ruining it for the rest of us. Everything was fine until you got here.
Heat radiated from Reese's face. Everyone at the shop gathered around to watch, listening to the dramatic episode. Even Claire poked her head from the office because of all this shouting.
Shelley, that's enough, Paul boomed.
Shelley turned and looked like she would murder him with her eyes if that were possible. But Paul persisted.
Leave her alone. This is between us.
Us? Shelley shrieked. Is that why you cried out her name last night while you were losing yourself inside of me? Oh, Denaria! She changed her voice to imitate him in the throes of passion. Reese's gaze shot to him in disbelief. His mouth dropped open, and he went as pale as she was red.
Shell, I'm sorry.
He ran his hand around the back of his neck.
I'm sorry.
He seemed bewildered, unbelieving he could have made such a mistake. He'd been doing that too often lately. Shelley wasn't having any of it. She turned back to Reese. Were you planning to ever let him get you out of his system? You're leaving in a few more days. Why don't you just stop playing hard to get and just sleep with him already so we can all get on with our lives? She screeched. Tracy jumped in, about to cry. She couldn't stand conflict, and this was as bad as it could be.
Shelley, she screamed, you've got it all wrong. Reese isn't playing hard to get.
Regina saw it all in her head and tried to stop it, but it was a hopeless cause. Tracy, determined to help, to clarify the situation for Reese, her roommate and friend, blurted out,
Reese isn't playing hard to get. She won't sleep with Paul because she's a virgin.
You could have cut the air with a knife. Everyone, Shelley, Reese, Claire, and Paul, stood with some uncertain look on their faces. Enlightenment? Understanding? Horror? Reese glanced around for support, but they were all stunned. She was on her own. Paul turned and slinked off, needing to find space to think. Everyone else slowly turned to each other and started discussing the situation as if Reese wasn't standing right there to hear it, as if she no longer existed as a person, but rather a topic. Shelley started laughing incredulously. Britta and Ula nervously followed suit. People said they should have known. Everyone buzzed, almost mocking Reese in a roundabout way. The floor seemed to fall out from under Reese. She had no choice but to run. As she ran past the first room, the extra room that had no purpose, an arm stretched out and grabbed her, dragging her into the room as another hand cast across her mouth to muffle her scream.
"Shh," Paul hissed. "If you leave now, you know you'll never come back."
She stopped fighting him.
Reese, I'm so, so sorry.
Let go of me,
she snarled. He stared at her, completely helpless. They stared at each other, still able to hear most of the conversation raging outside. She would have preferred to run, but she couldn't deny it. He was right. If she left now, she would have to lock herself in her apartment, not daring to come out again until her flight in a few days. When Shelley had ranted until she couldn't rant anymore and everyone else finished discussing the scene, they slowly dispersed.
If I get the schedule up, they'll all start to leave.
Paul shifted smoothly between licking, biting, and puckering his lips.
No one comes in here. You'll be okay in here. Are you okay?
She refused to answer, refused to speak to him. She stared blankly at the corner of the room. He guided her to sit down on the bench.
You'll be okay. You're tough as nails, right?
He put his hand to his eyes and pinched the bridge of his nose.
You stand up to me all the time. You can stand up to anything.
She gave him a dirty look.
Denaria, she whispered furiously. Even in your sleazy fantasy world, you still have to piss me off?
He frowned and closed his eyes. He had nothing to say in his defense.
I'll get rid of everyone.
He hesitated briefly,
and then ran out the door so he could change the schedule. Once everyone knew what the next day's schedule would be, they would all leave and he would be able to think. He needed to think. Reese waited a few minutes, but she finally walked out of the room and up to Shelley. "I don't play hard to get. I am hard to get. Paul only wants what he can't have, and it's not my fault you played your slut card so soon." That got everyone's attention. Completely out of character, Reese had said her piece, and she walked off the deck and headed back to her apartment. Paul heard it all and didn't try to stop her. He rubbed the back of his neck again, wondering how she managed to amaze him time and time again. Tracy and Regina walked into the apartment less than an hour later.
"I'm sorry, Reese. It just slipped out."
Tracy held back tears, but barely.
"You and your stupid loud mouth, Tracy."
Regina went to the fridge and grabbed two of her beers. She handed one to Reese, sitting stoically in the recliner. Reese wasn't about to pretend she was ready to forgive Tracy at the moment, and she took Regina's beer without saying thank you.
"You are on the boat tomorrow,"
Regina said, watching for Reese's reaction. That was the final straw.
"What?"
Reese yelled. "All this time and now, now he decides to put me on the stinking boat?"
"Ugh,"
she screamed. "That man is so infuriating."
"Do you remember that picture? You asked me what Paul was looking at. It was you, Reese. Paul was looking at you in that picture."
"What? No, that isn't possible." Reese was taken aback a little, remembering his expression and watching Regina nod to confirm what she'd said.
"That man cannot get you from his mind. He might have been with Shelley, but you are the one on his mind," Regina said.
The sadness in her voice rang through, but being reminded about him with Shelley sent Reese back to her angry place.
"You think that's a good thing? I know you're in love with him, all right, so I understand how, in your mind, this sounds flattering, but it's not. It makes me sick."
"Why do you think I am in love with him?"
Shock and fear registered in Regina's expression. Reese closed her eyes and shrugged.
"Do you think everybody knows?"
Regina asked quietly. "No one knows." Reese finally gave up on her own feelings for a minute to soothe Regina's. "I just figured it out when I saw all the pictures you keep of him on your computer. No one else could possibly know, except Tracy now." Regina shot Tracy a dirty look.
"Which means everybody will know all about it in a matter of minutes."
"No, I promise."
Tracy shook her head furiously, trying to assure her friend.
"But I don't love him."
Reese needed to make it clear, talking over her roommates.
"I hate Paul's guts, and if he thinks about me like that, I don't want to be anywhere near his filthy, rotten..."
She shuddered. "The only thoughts he should be having of me at this point are thoughts of me murdering him in his sleep. I wish he would..." She broke into a sob and hopped up from the chair, making a break for her room.
"Just leave me alone."
Tracy tried to hug her, but Reese pushed her away.
"I'm sorry. I'm not feeling especially touchy-feely right now."
She ran into her bedroom and slammed the door.
Chapter 10.
The next morning, it took every ounce of courage she had, but Reese showed up at the office early, as usual. The doors were all unlocked, but she didn't see Paul anywhere, thank goodness. The tanks were already loaded on the boat, and she rolled her eyes. If he thinks this makes up for everything, anything. She checked the schedule. Regina's report was indeed true. Her name stood out to her, clearer than all the others. She would, in fact, be going out to dive that morning. "Let's get wet," the words Paul often used when the boat pulled away from the dock, came to mind. The information jump-started her nerves. No more excuses. No more blaming Paul. Time to pull on her big girl panties and finish what she'd set out to do. She took a deep breath and let it out slowly. When the other divers showed up, she did what they did. She knew what to do, but her trembling body apparently shook her brain until it dimmed numb. She dragged her gear onto the boat, attached her buoyancy compensator to the tank, her regulator, made sure she actually had air in her tank. She checked and rechecked to make sure she had everything. She went down her body from head to toe, thinking mask, snorkel, rig, BC, computer, tank, wetsuit, booties, fins. Did she miss anything? She ran through the checklist again. She still hadn't seen Paul. The other students were just starting to ask about him, too preoccupied with staring and gossiping about her to notice any sooner that he was missing.
"Anyone know where Paul is?" Dobbs asked. "It's time to go."
No one answered, so Mitch and Dobbs decided to split up and walked around the building, looking for him. Just as Dobbs reached the north side, Paul pulled up on one of the shop's two personal watercraft machines.
"Hi, what are you doing taking that out this early? We're diving today, eh?"
"I'll explain later."
He moored the machine and headed toward the office through the tunnel. Reese boarded the boat with everyone else when someone announced Paul had returned, but he called her into the office over the speaker. She sighed. Facing him didn't rank high on her list of things to do at the moment. She took her time on purpose, hoping to annoy him. Claire sat at her computer, alone in the office.
"You're here early today." It surprised Reese to see her already.
"Yeah, I had some things I needed to do."
"Is everything okay?"
"You and your sixth sense, you always seem to be able to tell when I'm stressed out."
Reese chuckled. "Sure that's all it is?"
"Of course, silly girl."
Claire turned her attention to her computer. "Where's Paul? As if I care."
"I don't know."
Claire didn't sound convincing. "He called me in here and just left?" Reese felt the urge to hit something. Claire shrugged. "He'll never change." Reese trudged out the door and saw Paul on the boat, talking to the divers. She growled under her breath with frustration. When he saw her coming, he stepped up onto the side of the boat, his usual spot, and the huddle broke up, everyone turning their attention to something else.
"Let's get wet, people."
Paul slapped the roof of the boat, and the engine roared to life. Reese quickened her step to get on board just as they cast off. She shot Paul one frosty glare and then refused to look at him again. The boat headed north, and Reese closed her eyes and tried to meditate her trembling away. It helped some, but not completely. She felt sick. They reached the tip of the island, but instead of heading around to the east side, Randy swung wide and came within 100 feet of a deserted island called Duna Cay. The government maintained the tiny, pretty island as a park, a popular place for the mainlanders to visit on weekends and holidays. Reese still sat deep in thought, trying to focus on her training. She didn't want to forget anything. She dreaded doing something to embarrass herself or dying a horrible death.
"Man overboard!"
It brought her back to the present, and she looked around to see who was in trouble. Before she spotted the victim in the water, Dobbs yelled at her to save him.
"Me? I'm not even certified. I haven't been trained for rescue."
"It's all good. You need to do it," he said.
No one else made a move to save whoever had fallen off the boat. She panicked. She'd seen the drill before, but she wasn't supposed to have to do it. She scanned the water and finally found the victim floundering in the water, yelling for someone to save him. Paul. She rolled her eyes. "No way. He can drown before I lift a finger to save him."
"But you sport, Reese. You have to do this."
"No, I don't. I don't need a rescue to get certified. Someone else will have to do it."
Dobbs finally pulled her aside.
"Paul told everyone on the boat that if anyone besides you jumps in to save him, he'd make their lives miserable. You have to."
She couldn't believe it, but she didn't want someone else to be punished because of her. She shook her head in defeat and started undoing her BC from the tank.
"What are you doing?"
Dobbs asked. "I'm not getting in the water without a flotation device." She finally got it free and put it on. She leisurely reached down and grabbed her fins. She sat down to put them on. When she stood again, she squeezed some Vizgoo into her mask and spread it around with her fingers.
"Reese, you have to be faster than this," Dobbs prodded.
She tried to make her way to the water bucket to rinse her mask, but her fins were harder to move in than she realized. Dobbs finally grabbed her mask and rinsed it for her and handed it back.
"Hurry, please."
He helped her to the side of the boat and then helped her get up on the side.
"Shoot,
I've never jumped off a boat into the ocean before. I'm scared.
Dobbs had finally had enough. He pushed her, and she toppled into the water. She came up gasping.
Dobbs!
Her mask came off on impact, and she struggled to get it back on, while trying to kick and stay upright, all at the same time.
The victim is dead by now, someone shouted.
Everyone on the boat laughed.
I really don't care, Reese yelled back.
She finally situated herself and made her way to Paul, who, when he saw her coming, finally, slipped under the water, slowly sinking away. She made it to him and tried to dive down to get to him, but she couldn't break the surface. She let the air out of her BC and tried again, to no avail. Paul watched her struggle and moved closer, grateful he could hold his breath for nearly 4 minutes. She finally made it under, but instead of getting to him and bringing him to the surface, she used her powerful split fins to swim as fast as she could, and she rammed him in the stomach with her head. It knocked what little breath he still had out of his lungs. She moved behind him and grabbed him by his hair, giving a sharp yank before kicking upward with him in tow. When they broke the surface, the boat was gone. She looked around, panicked a little when she spotted it a mile away, headed off without them.
What? She shrieked. They left us?
She talked to herself because she refused to speak to Paul.
Are you kidding me?
Ow, he mouthed while feigning unconsciousness, but she yanked his hair again and headed for the beach on Duna Cay. She finally made it and dragged him out of the water as far as she could, but then just left him and walked onto the sand. You'll die before I do CPR on you, so if you were hoping for some mouth-to-mouth, forget it. He rolled over onto his stomach and watched her. She removed her BC, sat down, and got both fins off while looking out over the water, watching the boat become a tiny speck before heading to the other side of the island. I'm not getting certified, am I? She refused to look at him.
We still have time.
She shot him a fiery glance. I'll be on a plane in 2 days. Considering a no-fly day, I'm done.
I'm running another boat this afternoon. I'll get you wet, I promise.
She stared at him, unbelieving. You only do that when we have guests.
And for you.
He stood up.
I'm sorry I sprung this on you, but I needed a chance to talk to you, alone.
You planned this? Why?
Yes.
He walked over to one of the picnic tables and grabbed a backpack, which just happened to be there. He pulled a blanket from the pack and laid it down on the sand next to her. She jumped up and away from him with her fins in her hands. She held them up like a weapon, not taking her eyes off of him. He saw her reaction, and it didn't take long to figure out the thoughts running through her mind.
Hey, no, it's not what you think.
He stepped closer, but she swung her fins at him and whacked him across the arm.
Ouch!
He looked at her like she was insane. Stay away from me. This is so not happening. I'll hit you again, I swear. He stood stunned. He never anticipated her response and stood gaping. He finally shook his head, sat down on the blanket, and reached into the pack. He pulled out a thermos and 2 mugs and set them on the blanket, manipulating the sand beneath so they were stable. He reached back into the pack and pulled out a couple of bananas and a brown paper sack stained with oil.
The boat won't be back for about 3 hours. I have breakfast if you're hungry.
He pulled a fried scone from the bag and took a bite. Holding her fins, she looked out across the channel to the main island, trying to rally the courage to make the swim.
The current from the middle of the channel. See where it gets dark?
Paul pointed at the water, directing her attention to what he wanted her to see.
From there, all the way to the tip of the island on the other side, is a killer. I've seen you swim. I could probably make it if I had those fins of yours, but you'd be swept out to sea for sure.
She glared at him.
I'm not just saying that to keep you here, and I didn't go to all the trouble to get you here in hopes of having my way with you. I swear.
She gave in and plopped down on the blanket, but she sat as far on the opposite side as she could. He poured coffee into one of the mugs and handed it to her.
I hope you like cream and sugar.
She accepted it.
Donut? Randy's mom makes these. They're more like what we Americans call a scone, but they're pretty tasty.
Randy's mom? You mean Aunt Miranda, don't you?
That's right. You and Randy are cousins.
He chuckled. They ate without talking, and when they finished, Paul put their garbage and the used mugs back into the pack.
Denaria, I wanted a chance to tell you how sorry I am.
If you were really sorry, you wouldn't have started an apology by calling me Denaria. She sighed. How are you not embarrassed by all this? By what happened yesterday? I would be so embarrassed. I am embarrassed, and I didn't do anything. I wouldn't want to face you again, let alone go through all the trouble to set it up so I'd have to spend 3 hours alone with you.
I'm sorry, Reese.
He looked out over the ocean and gathered his thoughts.
I think Denaria is a very pretty name.
What about Princess? Why do you call me Princess Denaria? I'm not a spoiled brat. He took a second.
In the States, people have conjured up a wrong impression about the title, but I don't think a princess is a spoiled brat who gets her way whenever she throws a tantrum. A real princess has to constantly sacrifice what she really wants for the good of her people. I think you have a regal quality about you. I've noticed you sacrifice yourself, your own feelings, for everyone else. That's why I called you princess.
Huh. She rolled her eyes.
And I'm embarrassed. I get embarrassed when I fuck up. I have regrets, a lot of them, but it doesn't change anything. There are no second chances, no do-overs. What's done is done, so what's the point in letting the past rule the present? I'm sorry.
You're saying that a lot. She seemed riled up again. You should only say you're sorry if you mean it, and you can't really mean it if you don't even know what you're saying it for. Do you even know what you're saying it for? He deadpanned for a second, frustrated, trying to keep his temper in check.
Do you always have to be such a ballbuster? I'm trying to apologize.
Just what are you sorry for? I'm going to need to know exactly, because my list is probably a lot longer than yours.
I know. I'm sorry.
She glared at him for saying it again. He closed his eyes and sighed.
Do I really have to list everything?
You are, without a doubt, the meanest person I have ever known. No one has ever treated me as cruelly as you have. I'm not going to write you a blank check of forgiveness for things you probably don't really feel sorry about. I'll think about the things you mention. The rest will burn in my craw until I die. One side of his mouth smirked up.
Somehow, I don't believe you're the grudge-holding type.
Well, if I could say the same thing about you, we wouldn't be here right now, would we? And no one has ever called me a ballbuster before. Is that what you really think of me? He put his hand to his face and squeezed his mouth to try and hide the grin, trying to break free. But his eyes almost watered. She amused him so much.
Okay, I'll start with being mean. I was really angry with you for lying to me.
I lied to you? When? Her shock was genuine.
Our conversation had tanked. I asked you to come home with me. You turned me down. Said you were gay.
I never said I was gay. Her mouth gaped open.
I know that now, but at the time I thought that's what you said.
He still couldn't quite understand how he'd misunderstood. Now that he knew her better, he wondered how he never figured it out.
I don't usually have to do the asking, and I don't get rejected. When Tracy told me you weren't gay, I just assumed you said you were to brush me off. I went out on a limb for you, broke my own pattern. I was pissed.
His voice got quiet. He really was embarrassed.
I told myself you deserved to be messed with the way you'd messed with me.
Wow. All this time, that's what this has been about? She snorted, dumbfounded. Why didn't you just say something? I could have explained and saved us all the drama.
The last explanation I expected to hear was that you're a virgin. My pride? I thought you shot me down because you thought that I was an idiot.
He looked at her.
It never occurred to me that...
You've been horrible to me all this time. For one bruise on your ego, one unintentional bruise, you were going to cheat me out of my money. You knew it was all the money I had in the world.
You're angry again.
He sighed, and she didn't respond.
I have a plan to make it up to you, if you'll agree. I know it won't make up for everything, but it's a start.
She looked to be listening, so he continued.
Stay. I'm going to give you a full refund regardless, but if you stay, you'll have money to live on while I get you certified. You can take the Dive Master course and even become an instructor if you want, all on the house.
I wish I could.
I don't want to go back. I wish I never had to go back. But my plane leaves when it leaves. You can delay your flight. They'll probably charge a fee, but I'll pay it for you. It's the least I can do after everything I've put you through.
They both sat quietly, Paul watching her as she considered his proposal.
Do you really want to stay?
Well, I really don't want to go home. She glanced at him, and he remembered what she'd said about a change of scenery.
The island is a good escape.
He cast his eyes down and pretended to study the blanket.
I know a little about that.
She nodded. This island, the shop, feels more like home to me than Utah, now that my parents... If it weren't for one very grumpy owner.
If you want to stay, you should. I'll tone down the grumpy to you anyway. I promise. Stay as long as you like.
I can stay as long as my money holds out. She stared at the ground. And you'll stop yelling at me and burning holes in the back of my head with your eyes?
And no more bathroom or tank duty, except when it really is your turn. And no more dailies.
I don't mind the dailies. I don't know why you think they're so awful. He raised one eyebrow and looked at her out of the corner of his eyes.
Okay, you'd still have to do the dailies.
He laughed, but cautiously. So how will it be? I mean, between us.
What do you mean?
She looked at him skeptically. Just what do you expect to get from me for all this sudden compassion? Forgive me, but I'm not sure you can pull off being nice to me, unless you think there's something in it for you. That hurt, but he knew why she'd asked. What's the catch?
There's no catch.
He stared at the ground. I hate to point out the elephant in the room, but... Shelley?
Shelley? What the fuck does she have to do with anything?
He regretted his edgy reaction when he saw her expression. See? I knew you couldn't do this. You're going to have to stop yelling at me all the time. His jaw tensed and he started manipulating his mouth.
I'm sorry. It's not really you. I've been in a bad mood for years.
Really? I didn't notice, she said sarcastically.
I promise to stop yelling.
She made him laugh.
If you promise to stop provoking me.
He looked at her sideways again, his tongue in his cheek. She giggled, and he liked the sound. You haven't addressed my question. She sounded serious again. This isn't just some underhanded plan to do what Shelley said.
Just friends.
Friends. She tried the word on. She flopped back on the blanket, looking up at the sky. His eyes grew wide, and it took him a second to rein in his nasty thoughts. This might be harder for him than he realized. He looked away, forcing himself to think about insects. His lips twisted into poses they didn't often get to. All right, she said. He stopped trying to concentrate on anything and everything except her, to see if he heard her right.
You'll stay?
I'll stay until I run out of money.
Friends.
He tried it on. That part is a little harder for me, she said. For now, maybe we could stick with the term acquaintances. Randy drove the boat right up onto the sand, and Paul helped Reese aboard, pushed off, and they headed back to the shop. It didn't take Paul long to realize what everyone thought the two of them had been doing for the last 3 hours. They all knew him too well.
I've convinced Miss Eternally Virtuous to stay on at the shop a while longer so I can make up for my poor behavior toward her. So get your minds out of the gutter. Apparently, I'm still not her type.
Reese turned bright red. Chapter 11. Later that afternoon, the boat headed out for a round of afternoon dives, as Paul had promised. Reese sat on the edge of the boat, her bottom hanging over the edge, the heavy tank and all her gear pulling at her to drop. She tried to collect the courage to let go of the rail, but in the meantime, she hung on for dear life. She was supposed to fall backward into the water, the ocean, the real ocean, not the shallow, sandy-bottom bay she'd finally warmed up to back at the shop. She knew she needed to get over her fear of the ocean, but she never knew how hard it would be to let go and fall blindly backward into it. She almost hyperventilated.
"I don't think I can do it," she yelled.
"Yes, you can," Shelley rolled her eyes, swearing under her breath. "It's not that hard. Just let go." The boat rocked with the swells. Her gear, agonizingly heavy, made it next to impossible to hang on. The tank alone weighed a fair amount, a fact she'd become all too familiar with from her long tour on tank duty. But now, hanging on her back, combined with the heavy weights in her integrated pockets, she struggled just to bear her own weight. The others had to pull her to a standing position, help her climb up on the boat's side, and position her so she could do her back roll. But she couldn't bring herself to do it. A larger-than-average swell hit the boat and became her undoing. It tipped the delicate balance and she couldn't hold on any longer. She panicked, grasping desperately at the air and searching for anyone on the boat to save her. The only face she saw was Paul's, leaning over the edge to check on her, laughing at her. The stark jolt of the cold water hit her and she gasped. "You don't gasp underwater, stupid," her brain told her. She knew she was going to die, but, "Wait, I'm not drowning. I can breathe. Oh, yeah, I have my regulator in my mouth." She slowly glided down, listening to the muffled sounds of bubbles all around her, watching them envelop her as her senses gradually returned. The water wasn't as cold as it seemed when she first hit, and she oriented herself. She kicked and her head broke the surface. She looked up at the boat to see Paul still leaning over the edge. "You okay?" She nodded. He smiled at her and put his fist on top of his head, reminding her to give the "I'm okay" signal. "Oh, yeah." She returned the gesture and he smiled again. She kicked to move away from the boat and made her way to the other waiting divers. They seemed to be drifting farther and farther away from the boat, and it concerned her, but they didn't seem to be worried about it at all. It must be fine. Her heart pounded and she couldn't steady her breathing. Scared but determined, she put a little air in her BC and let herself float toward the others. Everyone else in the water had taken their regulators out of their mouths to conserve their air for the impending dive. They floated so casually on the surface, talking and laughing, while they waited for the rest of the divers on the boat to make their entrance into the water. Reese took her reg out, too. She put a little more air in her BC and tried to stay calm. A second later, she put her reg back in her mouth. It embarrassed her to be in